Well, everyone, welcome back. This is an impromptu podcast in tribute to the one and only Chris Cornell, who you were blessed to hear his voice at the beginning of this pod. Tay, what's going on, dude?
Not much, man. Still sad to hear what happened this past week. It's a real tragedy in the music world. But other than that, doing pretty good.
It really is. We got two other big Chris Cornell fans with us today. Thought it was only fair to bring them on, Joe and Dave. What's going on, Joe?
Not much. Just happy to be on back-to-back episodes and mourn our good friend Chris Cornell.
Unfortunately, we had to do this. You had to come back, yeah. Joe. Dire straits. Tragedy. Dave, what's going on, man?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Yeah, it's been a rough week for the music industry. Chris Cornell is a fucking legend.
You couldn't have said it better. On a scale of 1 to 10, how shocked were you guys when you you heard the news?
10. Dude, 10.
I was a 10. Yeah.
9.5. 9.5.
I'm going to say a 6 because it follows my theory.
You know, oh my gosh, you've ruined the podcast already.
No, I didn't. It's a tragedy, don't get me wrong, but my boy George Michael also died at 54 in December. So, you know, it was just bound to happen. Another great man taken out by science and
just
statistics.
Just to be clear, Taylor's theory. Tell us what your theory is.
Oh man,
this is getting worst. No, I'm still connecting the pieces. If you remember, we talked about music. Michael Jackson and Prince died at the same age, and they weren't the same age. They were born the same year, and they both died pretty close together. They died young. Yeah. There's something about that.
Yeah. So everyone in 1950, born in 1957, is going to die, according to Taylor's theory.
Good theory.
Good theory.
You know,
probably true.
Chris Cornell died at 52. What's up, Dave?
Can I weigh in on this? Yeah. This is coming from the kid who believes in karma. All right? I don't mean to get off topic.
Good point. Separate issue. Separate problem.
So the new theory is that people at 52 also have the possibility of dying.
I'm putting the pieces together, but
yeah,
there's a
that's what your theory is. But it sounds like, and because, which is weird, because I thought once you hit 52, you're good for a year. There, no one ever dies at that age.
Gosh.
You're just ready to go.
I swear to you, I got a jigsaw puzzle, and like half the pieces are still flipped upside down. And he's like, I got it, guys. I got the image. It's in my head. I can see it.
I haven't put the pieces together yet, but it's
almost there.
You
haven't
even
flipped them over yet, dude.
This side looks like a cardboard sheet. It's all gray.
This is weird. This is real gray. It all looks white to me. Okay. Yeah, it was a shock. I saw the headline, and I actually did a complete, like, double take. I was like, what the hell? No, this is actually somebody I like. And generally, and this is really insensitive, but a lot of celebrities have died recently, like always. And now that social media is so prevalent, it's like, oh, it's Prince, and it's Michael Jackson, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on. And usually
Whitney Houston.
And people haven't really done anything that I don't really have any connection with. Chris Cornell, somebody I listen to every week, if not close to it, almost every day. He pops up on my Spotify. And it was shocking. It was a big shock for me. I don't know.
Well, it was my birthday.
Oh, not to damn.
Talk a bit more about myself. But yeah, at like 6 o'clock, my phone, you know, beep that I had a text. I thought, oh, somebody's wishing me happy birthday. I look at it, and I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
It was, needless, a spoiler, it was not someone wishing me a happy birthday.
No. That's like the worst birthday Evite or anything anybody could send you.
That's not good.
So I guess just to kind of set the stage for anybody that's not as aware, he played a show with Soundgarden in Detroit May 17th. I saw some video of the show. It looked pretty normal. He tweeted before going in how excited he was to be back in Detroit to play a show. He went back to his hotel room after the show. He was given two of his anxiety medicine pills. I don't remember the name, Ativan or something. He took the pills. He spoke with his wife. His wife later said that he sounded kind of sleepy, a little out of it. He said he was fine and just tired. she was concerned about him later and asked the bodyguard to go check on him. The bodyguard went back to his hotel room and he was not responding, so he broke into two doors, one to get into the actual suite and then another into the, I believe it was the bathroom, and he had hung himself with a red exercise band that he hooked with a carabiner into the door and jammed it in there. And so that's the official autopsy. Well, not the autopsy report, but the medical examiner's description of the event. So an apparent suicide. Really big bummer. They said that he didn't have any signs of suicidal tendencies or thoughts previous, but that this purely could have been just a side effect of taking too much of his anxiety medicine. So, dang. Tay, what are your thoughts on that, man?
It's just, I can't even imagine like what his family's going through right now. But I mean, we see this from time to time, right? Like, I think being a celebrity and that fame, it's extremely stressful. We saw that with Heath Ledger back in 2008. Like, it's just sad that this stuff happens, you know? Like,
yeah,
I just can't even imagine.
Yeah. Dave, what are you thinking, man? I mean, it's just a tragedy, right? Straight up.
Yeah, it's sad, man, but, you know, I feel like, you know, it's his choice, you know, and it's like, you know, if he was going through some hard stuff, I mean, you know, I admire him for making the decision to do what he felt was right to get to where he wanted to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is sad. We lost a really great great singer, a great rock star, and what I would call. But I mean, ultimately, it's like, you know, you're supporting his what he believes is going to lead to, I guess, peace or like happiness, you know, or just completely ending it all, you know, if that's what he was shooting for.
Yeah, the details lead us to believe, though, it was kind of an accidental suicide. Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, what we have heard now.
Right.
There's some holes in the story. For example, the fact that this security guard broke down the door and then broke down the bathroom door, felt the need to do that, leads me to believe that there might have been something going on. Uh-huh. You know, this might have happened previously, whether it's an overdose of this prescription drug or any other type of drug, whether you know, because if this is the first time and you knock on the door and you know he's taken some anxiety sleep aid medicine, you probably don't feel the need to do some property damage. You're like, oh, he went to bed. But the fact that the security guard felt the need to break down the door just kind of hints at the fact that he had reason to believe that something else was going on, whether it had happened before or perhaps there had been conversations of, you know, ending it or something that, of course, he doesn't want to mention and tarnish the legacy. But that's the one hole in the story that I kind of question, and why he would do that so quickly.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
You know, Taylor talks about, what did you just say, something about, you know, the status of celebrity and trying to keep up? Bruce Springsteen just had an autobiography come out. It talks about his entire career and getting a record deal, and it's great. And then at the end, at the very end, in the last couple chapters, he talks about the last couple years and him being 60 years old and on top of the world and sells out stadiums and suffering with this severe depression that he, you know, it's almost puts him in a state of paralysis. And he doesn't, you know, his dad had some issues, so it might have been genetic. But he also talks about how you go from the highest high, you know, performing at halftime at the Super Bowl and selling out football stadiums around the world, and then all of a sudden you're just home and you're raking your, you know, garden and you're going out to dinner with friends. And even though that's okay, it doesn't even begin to match that high. And so his, you know, I don't know that obviously he's talking about his own life, but the depression that he gets in from being back and forth and being so high and then just living a normal life and being so high and being, you know, would stick him. So I mean, I just go to work and I come home and it's pretty much, my life is pretty mundane. You know, I never have people cheering for me
like the rest of us.
It's hard for me to put myself in that situation where you're worshipped by thousands, and then you go home and your dad, and you're like, oh, what's your math homework, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. It sucks, and it's a really hard balance. I mean, we look at famous people and go, well, they don't have really any real problems, you know? But it's all perception, you know? It's all relative to where you're standing. So whatever issues people are going through, they're just as severe as any other issue. Personally,
oh, sure.
I was really, like, selfish when I found out he died, because I actually, probably beginning of April, I was looking at some shows and who was coming to town, and I saw that Soundgarden was going to Indianapolis. Actually, 2 days before their Detroit show. And I was like, oh, frick, I need to get out there. I still have never seen them. I tried a few times, and it just never made it happen. And I actually thought about going. And now it's like a pretty big regret that I didn't go, because that would have been his second to last show that he performed. And I didn't go. So,
yeah, I was selfish as well, because they being Soundgarden, were, you know, supposedly in the studio or working on some demos for new music.
Uh-huh.
And I was excited about that. I was excited about their comeback and the fact they were back together, and they've been putting out a lot of reissues, which means they're going back through the catalog and cleaning stuff up. And, you know, it seemed like they were really coming alive again. And, for me, that was a good thing. And, so I was selfish that just it's over.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no more.
Sucks. So now we've kind of talked about what happened to Chris. Let's kind of just talk about his legacy and what his catalog meant to us. And it's cool because he's had a really diversified career. Some things we've all really liked, and some things it's a little more questionable. Scream, right, David and Taylor?
Scream is a masterpiece.
So, Tay, what about you? What's your favorite Chris Cornell period?
So I really liked the Audioslave period, and also I liked a lot of his solo stuff. Like when he did the song for the James Bond movie for Casino Royale, You Know My Name.
Oh yeah,
that was a great moment, and I think Joe has a little clip for us.
Oh yeah. I'm pretty sure I've heard this song played 3,000 times in David's old Mercury Sable.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, normally those James Bond songs, they kind of suck, you know? But I thought major props to whoever decided to recruit Chris Cornell for that, because it was a great one. I think one of the best.
Definitely. Better than Adele's?
Yes, better than Adele.
Better than Madonna's?
Yeah, and Sam Smith. Oh. Yes, much, much better.
Better than the Jack White, Alicia Keys mashup duet.
What movie is that one from?
Yeah, I don't even know that one.
That was from just one of the last couple. I don't know. One of the last couple.
Side note.
Quantum of Solace. Quantum of Solace.
Oh, side note. The worst one in the Daniel Craig's.
Yeah, yeah. I may be wrong, I think that's which one it is.
Pierce Brosnan is fat as shit now. Y'all should go look that up. It's really funny. Super fat. Oh, it's great. So, Audioslave for you, Tay. I know, Dave, you're a big Audioslave guy.
Yeah, dude. I still have a hard-on for Audioslave. So, it was crazy because I remember, I don't know how I started listening to him, but I was like, dude, man, those fuckers from Rage, man, they got together with the great singer from Soundgarden, the only person I thought was worth keeping in Soundgarden. Ooh. Besides Matt Cameron. Hey, I'm sorry, I know I'm gonna offend people on that, but I mean, they made beautiful music, and I don't think a single song they made was garbage, and they've only made 3 albums, so I mean, you know, that's not much content, but they made some great stuff together.
Did you say that none of the Audioslave songs are garbage?
I said that.
What wow. What about those Jewel of the Summertime?
Listen to it today. I love it. That's a great song to have when you're going to like throw down a barbecue, man. and like invite over Aunt Jemima.
So at all parties, you have an Audioslave song ready for the occasion.
Yeah, there's, you know. different scenarios.
I love the anti-Bush Wide Awake song.
Me too. Oh, Wide Awake's so good. True. Yeah, dude. Big middle finger to President Bush and his lack of help.
Yeah.
Fun balance they had there between the rage musicians and Chris's voice. Now, Joe, you have the longest history with Chris Cornell.
Yeah, and I'm with Soundgarden. That's my Boom. Favorite Chris Cornell era.
Same.
And not, you know, just the late from Down on the Up. Well, no. Bad Motor Finger, I love. Down on the Upside, I love.
Super Unknown.
You know, I didn't love as much just because that's when they peaked. And I was like, oh, everybody else likes it. And then, you know, you can go back. And as long as you can get past, you know, I'm not a huge Black Hole Sun fan just because of the video and how popular it got. But, you know, that's my wheelhouse right there.
Take out Black Hole Sun and Spoon Man, and that album's perfect.
Yep. I agree. My amazing. Favorite Soundgarden song, my favorite Chris Cornell song, is on Super Unknown, and it's a deep track.
Yeah.
But here, let me play it for a little bit. It's 4th of July. I don't know if you guys know this, but it's just
I know that song.
That
brooding,
deep, you know, like it's like they've down-tuned their guitars so far. I like to just crank this, you know, while I'm waiting for a parade on Independence Day.
That's amazing.
Just so good. I picture a flag flying backwards, you know, not upside down or anything, but with the stars on the right-hand corner and the stripes going to just...
Well, and unlike some of these bubblegum pop artists, Chris Cornell has a 4-octave vocal range. I mean, he is down in the basement, and then he'll be up in the top of his register like that. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I dabble in a little bit of guitar, and so do some Ben and David too. I tried playing, like, it's funny when you're looking up to play a Soundgarden song, you're like, what the hell type of tuning is this? Because it's like
everything's flat. It's like one string in the middle is like just totally out of place. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you tune the E string to like a C sharp. It's like what the hell? So it's great, and I think you can totally – they have such a unique sound.
Yeah, and he's got that – like you said, he's got that wide range. And so when he's low, like in 4th of July, you know, it's this gravelly, you know, type of voice. And then when he gets up into the high notes, like on Show Me How to Live or something,
yes.
It's almost like a completely different voice. But it's still his singing voice. You know, it's not like he goes into a falsetto or some other. It's just a complete range that changes as it crescendos up. It's pretty amazing. And I think that's one of the things that made him so incredible is because he could do this hard rock and have that gravelly screaming going. And then he could do softer stuff that sounded... still had that edge, but sounded like it matched the music.
Absolutely. And somebody wrote on the Ringer, Bill Simmons' website, somebody talked about that, talking about Jesus Christ Pose and how that opening instrumental is amazing. Just this pounding hard rock, heavy metal track. And then somehow he comes in and it's just perfectly fit for the music. Just this high range. It's just amazing. He had so much control over his voice. As far as where he stands within the spectrum of grunge music, I know you're a huge Pearl Jam fan, Joe.
Yeah.
Do you see them as like co-heads of the legacy, Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder? Or is it Eddie Vedder owns
it?
I don't.
And it's probably not. Well, obviously he does now. Jeez, he's the
last
man
guy
standing. Asterisk, Taylor's favorite show.
Ben's favorite show, not mine.
But no, I mean.
You got freaking screwed, man.
In reality, Soundgarden were the real deal. They were there in Seattle. They were the pioneers of grunge.
Uh-huh.
And Pearl Jam kind of, you know, rode the way for a little bit. They picked up Eddie Vedder from San Diego, and they weren't doing the club shows. They just kind of got the popularity, but yet they're still the bigger band. And so I think that Pearl Jam kind of has the throne right now and did for the last decade. And a lot of that's because Soundgarden stopped. You know, Chris went solo. You know, there's the Audioslave thing. And Pearl Jam just has kept on plowing through. But in true grunge alternative, I mean, Soundgarden is that exact definition of what you're talking about when you talk about that type of music, more so than any other group, more so than Nirvana.
Oh,
more
no.
So, you know, than Pearl Jam. It's, I mean, they were exactly what you think about and talk about when you talk about alternative grunge.
Yeah, and they're interesting. Soundgarden's interesting because when bands were just basically dumbing it down and revolting against kind of what the 80s were, Soundgarden basically took all of the instrumental complexity that existed in the 80s and created the sound that is grunge. So they made it just work perfectly, in my opinion. They're the pinnacle for me. But
I think that Chris Cornell, too, he just looked like such a badass, you know?
Like absolutely.
He looked like the rock star, you know, like
he look, he just, you're right, he always looked cool.
Always.
He's 52 and he may have looked cooler last week than he did when he was 21.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, he just had a very cool rock star look, you know, with his facial hair and his dark, you know. I mean, he just looked cool.
He was cool. He had like those freaking army boots, the camo jeans, running around on stage. Somehow it all looks cool. Always does for him.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, man. I was impressed with how he – let's talk about it. Let's get it out of the way. It's the elephant in the room. Let's talk about Scream. So he's in Audioslave. Me and Dave and Tay are in high school. You putting it on now?
I'm putting it on. Yeah, keep on talking. I'll get to the cool part.
He's in Audioslave, and then he decides to go solo. And this is, like, devastating to David. I think David cried in his room for about 2 days.
Yeah, but he'd already had two solo albums come out.
Right, Euphoria Morning, and what was the other one before that?
Carry On.
Carry On.
Carry On's great. They're both great.
They were good.
They're both great.
They're good.
Yeah.
But this one was a little different, Dave. What was different about this one?
Scream, I think, I don't know if you want to just try to dabble around in hip-hop or whatever, but it was a fucking nightmare, dude.
Well, it was produced by Timbaland.
Timbaland. Yeah.
And Timbaland went on tour with him.
Yep.
And would do whatever Timbaland does at a, you know, stands over on the side of this stage. Da 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 da.
JT's on that album. He's featured.
Really?
Justin Timberlake's in there. Yep. He's in there somewhere.
Oh, yikes. Man.
It just felt really.
You know, and Timbaland was the hot thing right at that moment. I mean,
he was.
There's always a hot producer that comes through, whether it's Glenn Ballard, you know, after Alanis's Jagged Little Pill, or whether it's Timbaland right after Nelly Furtado's, whatever that album was. I don't even want to pretend to know. You know, but the producers will come and they'll come and vote. Linda Perry was hot after her work with Pink, and everybody wanted to work with her. So he just kind of rode that wave, and here was somebody that was really popular that I think he thought could take him to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
So
most definitely. And I don't think he did.
No. Well, he took it to another level. Unfortunately, it was way, way down. It was a much lower level.
Down in the basement.
In fact, when he came to our town to on a solo show for Scream, I didn't go, which looking back is like, wow, I really hated that. And B, it was at a movie theater. It was at a movie theater with a stage, and people just kind of lined up outside and went in. And I mean, that tells you how bad Scream
was. What a weird career move.
I saw Scott Weiland solo at that same movie theater. So I guess, you know, take your pick, but
damn.
Yeah, it was odd. And then after that is when Soundgarden got back together. So sometimes you have to bottom out to realize how good you had it.
Well, back when David was on Facebook, I remember he was so upset, he made a Facebook group called Chris Cornell's a Gypsy. And I'm probably still a fan of in that group on Facebook somewhere.
Oh, man, I forgot about this.
I was thinking back. I was like, you really got mad at him for that.
Yeah.
You were pissed.
I wanted to kill him, dude. Too bad I still can't.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, I was just saying, yes. Too soon.
Too soon?
Way too soon.
Wow. Wow. Wait. It's still raw, dude.
Yeah. Super raw. Yikes. You're going to have to cut something out there.
Yeah. Edit that part out. Stop it. Stop it. We'll edit that part out.
Back to fonder memories and not David regrets. What was it like seeing him live, Joe?
It was great. I saw him with Soundgarden twice. Once at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, and once at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Denver. Which,
so jealous.
By the way, if you ever get to go to Red Rocks, you should. But great. But you know, it was exactly what you'd think. There wasn't anything over the top with Soundgarden. They had maybe two light bars up top. There were no fireworks or explosions or lasers or...
Really?
No. It was just those guys on stage playing music. And it rocked. But, you know, there wasn't a need to, like, try to excite the crowd because the music held up on its own. So he wasn't... obviously he's much older at this time. He's in his late 40s. But he's not jumping into the crowd. He's not... You know, there's nothing out. It's just guys playing music. And it was enough. You speak about Jesus Christ Pose. In Seattle, when that came on, it rocked so hard. And I was just, you know, I wasn't in a pit or anything. But I thought, am I going to pass out? Because it's you know, impacting my body so much, my physical. You know, you're just like, yeah! I could have felt like beat, what is it?
Joe's heart slowing down. It's just like, oh, I don't know if I can do this.
Oh, yeah! Jesus Christ! Yeah! You know? So it was awesome. It was incredible. But, I mean, it was great. And then because it didn't need all that other extra stuff, there was no video screens. They weren't showing.
They don't have a video screen? Between.
Nope. It was just guys playing music. And it was great because it's all that you needed. And then you did pay attention to the music. And the only thing that was distracting was how great Matt Cameron was.
Okay.
Matt Cameron's drumming is distracting because you're like, holy crap. I'm just watching the drummer. But that's for another podcast.
Damn.
But it was great. It was great. And for me personally, it was you were seeing someone that connected you to a time of your life, a formative part of your life. And music always does that, ties you to a certain place. And you were you were appreciative of what they'd done for you, and they were, you know, had hit that point where they weren't worried that people weren't standing up.
Mm-hmm.
They were just playing music and glad you were there and paying tickets. And I mean, by all means, the shows were sold out and,
right.
and incredible venues. So it's not like they were missing, you know, it was a cool experience. Very cool.
And the tragedy of this for it to happen now is it seemed like he was really enjoying Soundgarden on this like reprise. Like them getting back together, they made some fun music videos. Like it seemed they really were enjoying being back together, you know? Because sometimes you get that slog of like, hey, we're in this to make some money, you know, pay off our taxes or whatever, you know, late age bands do. But it seemed like they were really getting into it. Tay, what will be your lasting memory of Chris Cornell?
I'm probably going to keep listening to his music. I go back to, I listen to Soundgarden and Audioslave pretty regularly, I'd say. Because I love Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Alice in Chains and all those bands. But I really like his last acoustic album, Higher Truth. I know he released a single this year, The Promise. But his Higher Truth album, I really like that. I'm into, like, I love acoustic music. So, like, there's a few songs in there that I really like. So I think that'll probably be my lasting memory of him.
And it's cool when an artist that you like for other reasons has a more mellow album, because you can kind of hit that middle ground. You're like, you know, I kind of want something a little more mellow. You know, maybe you're reading, or you're just sitting, you know, hanging out, and you're like, oh, I kind of want something more mellow. But you don't have to put on Jason Mraz or John Mayer,
yes.
you know, to get that. You're like
the Starbucks acoustic mix,
right? You're like, this still kicks ass, but it's a little bit less high tempo.
Very true, and it shows the range and musical talent that these people actually have. You know, they're not a one trick pony.
Yeah, you know, Rage never had a ballad.
No.
You know, they didn't put out an album of ballads.
Born of a broken man!
Well, and my favorite Soundgarden song is The Day I Tried to Live. That song just rocks hard, man. I love that intro. And his vocals on that are insane.
And dude, nothing better than waking up to a gray, gloomy day and blasting that song, dude, on your way to work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There. Dave, any...
Oops, sorry. Sorry.
No! But turn it off!
Sorry, we got screen going.
Dave, any parting thoughts for Chris Cornell? Anything you want to let him know? Put it out there. Have you come to peace with what he did in his career?
Yeah, man. He's done it all. Yeah, I just really like his music, man. Huge Audioslave fan. Love it, dude. I just wish I could have seen him live before he passed. But yeah, man, he's the shit. I'll keep listening to his music like Taylor was saying he's going to do.
Live on in our ears for a long time. Joe?
Get his family that royalty money.
Any passing last thoughts for Chris?
No, I think he's given us enough. You know, if this is obviously this is all that we're going to get.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of had a couple incarnations of him. We could have just had Soundgarden Chris Cornell and been sad about that. But the fact that he has a couple of good solo albums and Scream, you know, was like a bonus. The fact that we have the Audioslave albums
trilogy
is a bonus. And so you just kind of like, man, I wish there was more, but there's enough, you know,
right.
There's enough. And you got that option to go and, it's too bad. It's a real tragedy. But I guess thanks. Thanks for everything. You were a cool dude. You got a lot of us through some weird times in life, you know, as you're growing up, and it's cool to have something legitimate that you can fall back on. And so I guess thanks.
Amen. I echo that. He was the real rock star for me, like growing up. Like that, I never really connected with music in high school with the bands that were like real popular or new. So going back and like discovering Soundgarden, what they've done, and seeing him in Audioslave still rocking hard and kind of pushing himself. He was always somebody I always looked up to musically, and the last couple of days have just kind of sucked. It's really sad. I feel for him. I feel for his family, for whatever happened. It just is a tragedy to me, but you're right. We got a great collection of music from him that will live on. People can go back and see all he's done. It's phenomenal.
And you know, the last couple of years, social media has allowed us to see another side of these rock stars that were just so untouchable. And, you know, Trent Reznor quit Twitter for a while because he was dating this lady and talking about it, and everyone got so pissed. They're like, "You're Trent Reznor. You shouldn't be in love. What are you doing to being excited? You know, why don't you go kill a pig and drink its blood?" And finally, he just quit. He's like, "I'm a person." Well, you know, the last couple of years, we've seen this side of Chris Cornell, you know, and he's posting on Instagram pictures of his daughter, and they go to zoos, and, he was really, really, you know, appeared to, you know, be in love with his wife, and he'd, you know, post pictures of them on vacation, but he was still badass, you know.
Right.
He was at a zoo, but he was still a cool dude with glasses, and he was hard, you know, but you kind of got it both sides. And so as we grow up, you know, a little bit behind him, you know, we start to make those own choices. We're like, yeah, you know what, he kicked ass, but we can kick ass too. You know, it's okay to have your heroes have a family, and your heroes talk about, hey, you know, this is amazing. My daughter's so great. And, oh, I love my wife. I'm so glad we got to spend this week in Jamaica together, or whatever. You know, it was cool to see that other side of him as he, I don't want to say mellowed out, but he allowed us fans to kind of peek inside his real life. And he's still cool as fuck.
Agreed. He aged well.
Yeah.
And he gave us hope that, you know, a couple guys like us could make a podcast where we don't know shit, but we still do it anyway. So,
yeah,
damn right. Well, thank you, Chris. We appreciate it. You will be remembered. Joe, can you play us out, The Keeper?
I can.
I think this is a good song. This is the first song I listened to after I heard he passed. It's a beauty. Enjoy it. Rest in peace.
We'll see you.
see